Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Kroti in Washington, D.C.
Well, we want to see the end of the indictment. We want to see whether actually the process will go through.
Africans react to the indictment of former U.S. President Donald Trump.
If we say we want to have free, fair, credible, and inclusive elections, that is exactly what we are supposed to do. That's the right thing. It becomes transparent.
A Sierra Leonean group plans a protest to demand free and credible elections.
But the speaker's ruling was that the honorable member for Shakafuswa was out of order. We thought that he was unjustly treated yesterday, and we had to walk out in solidarity with him.
And Zambia opposition lawmakers walk out of parliament over mistreatment and harassment from the police. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to appear in a federal court in Miami, Florida on Tuesday. The former president is to answer 37 felony charges related to the mishandling of classified documents after he left the White House, including top secret files on U.S. nuclear and defense programs, according to an indictment made public Friday. The charging documents say that on at least two occasions, Trump showed classified documents about U.S. military operations to people who did not have a security clearance. For reaction about how Africans see the indictment of the former U.S. president, I reach attorney Leonard Anyogo. He is a practicing lawyer in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
It's a kind of misfeeling and wish at the same time, because here in Nigeria, it is totally very strange. For instance, the former president of Nigeria to be tried or to be indicted, it has never happened in the history of Nigerian past leaders, especially presidents. The question that is being asked on the street is that, when are we going to get to that? But then, in the African continent, it's not totally true, because the former president of South Africa, Zuma, was convicted and he was even sent to prison. But in Nigeria, we are not too sure whether we will get to that level very soon, because the office of the president of Nigeria, whether president or PAP, seems to be covered with secrecy and all that. So we're looking forward to a day that a former Nigerian president will be called to account for his deed in the office.
Do some Nigerians expect that the judicial system, or for that matter, the authorities will take a cue from this? Because some people are suggesting that if former presidents are prosecuted for alleged crimes committed, then autocracy will continue in Africa. Your thoughts?
Yes, it will be a very welcome development if former presidents, especially in Nigeria, could be called to answer for their deeds in office. That will curtail a bit of autocracy. It will curtail a bit of non-adherence to rule of law. Because, you know, when you're in office, you have immunity, you can do and undo. Nobody can have a criminal or civil charge against you in case of the Nigerian presidency. So when you leave office, people expect, just like the governors are called to question, but Nigeria will not have that opportunity where a former president has been called to question or asked to account for his deeds while in office. The United States is a bastion of democracy. They all look up to the United States. So if the former president of the United States could be called to account for his deeds, so it's an inspiration to the Nigerian judiciary and the Nigerian state institution to actually be inspired to call to question Nigerian past leaders.
What are the expectations among lawyers, particularly in Nigeria, those who are friends of yours?
Well, we want to see the end of the indictment. We want to see whether actually the process will go through. Because why that hesitation is that in Nigeria, a case could commence, but then it takes a whole eternity sometimes to come to a conclusion because of the Nigerian judicial system is quite very, very slow. Though there are some steps lately to fasten that judicial administration of justice. So the expectations, okay, let us see how the trial will begin, how the trial will go, how fast the trial will go. These are some of those things we'll look up to and see whether the U.S. judicial system will actually be quick enough to administer justice in the real sense of it.
Leonard Anyogo is a practicing lawyer in Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Sierra Leone, an opposition figure says an anti-government protest planned this week meets constitutional provisions for free speech. Mohamed Camara, not his real name due to concerns about his personal safety, says the protest appears to be aimed at holding the authorities accountable to the public. The protest comes as critics express concern about the poor economic conditions and what they describe as a lack of commitment by the authorities to ensure the coming June 24 elections are transparent, credible and peaceful. The government condemned the last protest, saying it was aimed at violently overthrowing the administration. For more reaction to the planned protest, I reach opposition figure Mohamed Camara in the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
Honestly, in a democratic settings like ours or anywhere in the world, I think everybody have the freedom or the right to protest, to peaceful assemblies. That's a right.
The last time a protest like this was held, the government labeled it as an attempt by opposition groups to overthrow the government.
That is the issue, and that is the point, and that is the reason people like us are trying to come up, so that we can shift that ideology that the government reigns supreme. No, it is the people that should reign supreme, not government.
The organizers supposedly expressed concern about certain development, including the non-availability, they said, of the final voter list that will be used for the June 24 elections. Do you think some of these allegations they are making are legitimate?
These concerns are very legitimate, and it's in the public domain now, and the election management bodies do not want to pay attention or to pay credence to these concerns, and that is responsible for the organizers to think otherwise, that then we need to put the pressure and call the attention of the international community or of our people within the country or the sub-region. That's the reason.
Some opposition groups have also called on the international community to force the Electoral Commission to release the final voter list. What are your thoughts?
Exactly my thoughts. If we say we want to have free, fair, credible, and inclusive elections, that is exactly what we are supposed to do. That's the right thing. It becomes transparent.
But do you believe the upcoming elections will be free, fair, transparent, and credible?
As it is standing now, and as you rightly put it, that there is a group of opposition that want to protest, that tells you automatically that they do not trust the process. And that if you continue or you conduct this particular election, it tells you it's not going to be free, fair, and credible. That is the meaning, when people are challenging it right before it even started.
Have you approached or have people approached the Electoral Commission to ask why it is not releasing such information? Because there are speculations that even the old voter list could be used, which will prevent those who turned 18 and above since the last election from voting.
And this is a serious situation. From informations we are getting, the main opposition party have engaged the ECSL on several occasions, approaching them verbally in meetings and writing them. Those have landed on deaf ears. Yeah, so it's a serious concern. The people of this nation need to know. The ECSL, with its independence, is not supposed to do everything concerning the election by itself and secretly. No, it's supposed to be transparent enough that everybody gets satisfied that this process is going on and we are part of it and we are participating in it. And yes, we are sure it's going to be free, fair, and credible. But in the absence of participation of other key stakeholders, and you are doing things all alone by yourself, it becomes fishy, very fishy.
But the Constitution gives the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, or the ECSL, the only institution, the mandate to organize elections in the country. So why are people doubtful of its ability to organize free, fair, transparent, and credible elections when they did 5 years ago? Why wouldn't people repose confidence in them to do the same this year?
Well, in the first place, it was based on the manner in which the current election commission boss was appointed. So a lot of people believed he's not qualified mandatorily to take the position. And a lot of people look at him also as being partisan, as not being neutral. And there are a whole lot of things around that. So suspicion started even at the point of appointment. So now they believe that he's playing the bidding for the ruling establishment, or he's even lobbying for them. So the suspicion started right from there. And now nobody is questioning the responsibility or the statutory authority given to them to conduct the elections. But also there are other rules and regulations that govern them in their conduct. When especially it comes to election, the participating institutions, the political parties, have to participate in decision making, certain decision makings. You don't leave them out. So that is the situation.
Mohamed Camara is a leading opposition figure. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
With more than 5 million weddings that take place in Africa every year, large cities are always spruced up with pomp and color. On Our Voices, we'll be taking a peek into the multi-million dollar industry. We'll also examine the opulence associated with African weddings, social media influence, and the general cost of a wedding in our different cultures. Join the conversations Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Meanwhile, a group of Americans who trace their roots to Sierra Leone is calling on the U.S. government to help ensure the coming June 24 elections in the West African country are transparent and credible. Members of the Sierra Leonean American Political Affairs Committee, who say they are non-political, presented a resolution to U.S. lawmakers on Monday. This after they held a protest in Congress calling on the U.S. government to pressure the authorities in Electoral Commission to organize peaceful and transparent polls. Voters cast their ballot on June 24 to choose a new president, parliament, mayors, and local representatives. For more about the protests and the calls for credible elections, I reached Dr. Shaw Sawyer and Madame Abi Derami. They are the coordinators of the Sierra Leonean American Political Affairs Committee.
All these protesters are here to ask Congress to make strong statements in Sierra Leone that we need a free, fair, and peaceful election. We have just come out of 11 years civil war, and we're looking forward to continue having free and fair elections. So we're here as Sierra Leone American voters, constituents here in America, to ask our congressmen and our House members to make strong statements and to have resolutions that we should have free, fair elections in Sierra Leone.
Are you going to present a petition to these lawmakers after this protest?
Yes, we have already provided draft resolution that we need from the government of America, because we're taxpayers here. Also, we're asking the State Department and through the Embassy of America in Sierra Leone to make a strong statement. Let me ask you to talk to Madam Abi Derami, who is also leading all the women out here for this protest. Madam Abi Derami.
We need free and fair elections in Sierra Leone. We want the complete data.
What is it about free, fair elections you are talking about? Because the president, in several forums or fora, promised free, fair, and credible elections in Sierra Leone.
Because there have been a lot of intimidation and harassment and unprovoked attack on the opposition supporters. The electoral bodies have refused to be transparent with the electoral data.
On the page of the Electoral Commission, they have some information on there. Why do you think that is not enough?
Because free and fair elections ensure that the rights of the citizens are protected. We need the full data so that we as citizens of Sierra Leone will be able to check the data against our name, to make sure that our names are listed on the voters' registration and that no rigging will be take place on the day of the election.
Elections in Sierra Leone. Elections in Sierra Leone.
Some people are suggesting that by doing this here in the U.S., you are directly calling for an interference in the internal affairs of Sierra Leone.
We are not asking for interference. We are asking for observers so that we can have a fair election. These international bodies and international partners have funded Sierra Leone election. They have funded peace in Sierra Leone. So we want to continue to have that peace. our international partners have provided logistics and funding to keep the peace in Sierra Leone. They have invested in Sierra Leone. So it is for them also to keep the peace in Sierra Leone, to see that our people live peacefully, to see that we have no corruption, to see that everybody voting right is respected.
Dr. Shaw Sawyer and Madam Abby Derami are the coordinators of the Sierra Leonean American Political Affairs Committee. They spoke with me from here in Washington. Senegalese President Macky Sall is giving himself until the end of June to provide answers to the ongoing crisis 8 months before the presidential election, local media reports. Sall is under pressure from all sides to dispel heavy uncertainties after deadly violence. Meanwhile, opposition leader Ousmane Sonko is still barricaded in his house after being sentenced to 2 years in prison. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached reporter Alpha Jallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, for the latest developments.
The situation is now gradually stabilized. There is no demonstration, but then Mr. Sonko is still barricaded in his house. And all these days, even yesterday, the members of his party had a press briefing. They said that Mr. Sonko is just like he has been taken prisoner, but in a different prison. They have created a new prison for Mr. Sonko in his house because his lawyers cannot access to him. The only person who can access Mr. Sonko, according to them, is his protocol officer. But right now, Dakar is gradually coming back to normal. And the other members of the civil society organization and some opposition members, calling themselves F24, they wanted to hold a peaceful protest today, but they were denied permit.
So Mr. Sonko is still barricaded in his home. Then are the courts trying to take him to prison, or maybe they let him be there?
People are still saying that's a debate in the country, because still the court ruling that he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. He was not in court. He was tried in absentia. But then until now, people thought that night he will be taken to prison. But until today, he's still in his house, because I was around that place this morning, and that is where I even, pray Friday prayers. And there's a heavy presence of the security forces there till now. So I just assume, and the people say that, and even his members of his party say that he is in his house, but completely barricaded by the security forces.
Now, where does that leave his campaign for president? Can he campaign?
Asked whether he's about the future of his, political activities, I said that that's a very difficult question to answer now, because he is barricaded. Members of his senior, top brass from his party cannot get access to him. Yesterday, the communication officer of his party, El Malik, he was on YouTube, and he was saying that let him just make it clear for the Senegalese and for those who support the Patriots and Mr. Sonko and their sympathizers. Let him just tell them that Mr. Sonko is taking as a prisoner. Though the fact that he's still in his house, but he is a prisoner because his compound is barricaded. Nobody can get access to him. His lawyers have tried many times. They were denied access to Mr. Sonko's place.
So what is the government saying? Has the president himself said anything about this?
Yes, the president, just during the dialogue, the national dialogue, which is, currently going on, the president, yes, he said that the situation, he is completely saddened by what happened in Senegal. He never thought that, this could have taken in a democratic country where the rule of law is being respected. But he said that the fact that, there were some infiltrators, people who were caught with firearms, people who went on the rampage, vandalizing businesses and all that. But the president said that he just used the occasion yesterday just to extend his condolences to those who lost their loved ones and to those whose properties were vandalized and stolen. He said that in the coming days he is going to address the nation. On the strategy that has just occurred in this country last week.
Alpha Jallo is a reporter in Senegal. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. In Zambia, opposition members of parliament are expressing concern about what they say is mistreatment and harassment from the police. This after opposition lawmakers walked out of parliament in solidarity with a member who was recently placed under arrest. They say it appears the police are targeting parliamentarians from certain ethnic groups, an accusation the police deny. Supporters of law enforcement say anybody who violates the country's laws should be investigated and, if found guilty, arrested and prosecuted. They add that no one should be excluded. For more about the complaints of the opposition lawmakers, I reached parliamentarian Munir Zulu in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
I had raised the matter of public emergency importance pursuant to Standing Orders 134 of National Assembly to understand why Zambia police has developed a habit of trailing members of parliament when they leave parliament, because they know that within the parliament grounds they can't effect an arrest. So we wanted to know as to why they don't send us the normal communication channels, like a call out, a phone call. As a member of parliament, you are needed by the police. Instead, they've just been abducting us. You are at the shopping mall with your kids, like the case of Honorable Christopher Shakafuswa. He was buying ice cream for his kids, and before he knew it, he was abducted, and only to learn that it is Zambia police. So we wanted to have a government position. Is it that they want us to be keeping quiet, then those abductions will come to an end, or not? But the speaker's ruling was that the honorable member for Shakafuswa was out of order. We felt that he was unjustly treated yesterday, and we had to walk out in solidarity with him.
Raised an issue that certain members of parliament from certain areas of the country are being targeted. Are you not raising the issue of ethnicity or tribalism in Zambia?
In fact, Peter, we must speak to issues that are happening. Keeping quiet is not resolving anything, because then you are making the anger levels boil. You know, people are angry but they're quiet, which is dangerous. We must speak to this issue. Are you sure, Peter, the only members of parliament that are suspects are those that are Nyanja and Bemba speaking? Anyone who is from the Tonga speaking, Lozi speaking, is innocent? So I'm saying, can we speak to this issue? And I'm not saying raise against this tribe or that tribe, but I'm stating facts. Can we have a very honest conversation? They preach to say we are one Zambia, one nation, but what they're practicing is the opposite.
But if certain people are flouting the law from certain areas of the country or part of the country, shouldn't law enforcement agencies like the police enforce the law? Shouldn't they face the full rigors of the law?
Peter, I agree with you 100%. Now, Peter, why then should it be the same police officers from the same region arresting people? Whether you are in Northern Province, you are in Eastern Province, the same police officers that come from Lusaka, from same region. Is it by coincidence? Is it by design?
Are you accusing the police?
I'm not accusing. It's not an accusation. I'm stating facts. The same police officers have gone to Northern Province to arrest a member of parliament. The same police officers have gone, same name, arresting same people. So what do you call that? So all I'm saying is, can we have a very honest conversation to this matter? I know it is quite sensitive, others avoid it, but I feel duty-bound to speak to it, because then I'll be helping the country.
Some people are suggesting that instead of, they said, you and other opposition leaders whipping up ethnic sentiment or tribal sentiment, why shouldn't you encourage the police to have some form of training in order for their actions not to be portrayed or speculated as if they are targeting certain people from ethnic part of the country in Zambia?
You see, the Minister of Home Affairs is from Southern Province. The police that have been abducting us are from Southern Province, but based in Lusaka. So it is a very difficult situation to convince our colleagues that what you are doing is wrong. What is wrong with having a policeman in the name of Mr. Zulu arresting me as a member of parliament? But for them, it's too obvious. They send their tribesmen, which we're challenging. We're saying no to it. We can't pretend that it's not happening when it is happening. So we've got to speak to these issues.
Was your decision to embark on this walkout achieved? Because some people are saying it's just a mere publicity stunt just to make the opposition in parliament feel relevant.
No. Look, we know how difficult it is for us to debate in parliament. we have difficulties. You see, when you just raise up, you will see debates being curtailed. Yesterday, the honorable member for Chirui was raising a very important matter on what the UPND Secretary General had said about the Archbishop of Lusaka. He was curtailed. He had to, unfortunately for him, he fell for the trap. His emotions overtook the show, and then he gave up. So it's not easy. We are not enjoying the democracy that President Hakainde Hichilema preaches about. It's not the democracy he talks about when he's outside this country. No. Stop. Stop. How? Why can't the members themselves oppose each other?
Munir Zulu is a Zambian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. More than 5,000 delegates at the United Nations Human Settlements Program Assembly backed efforts to meet the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, especially for housing and urban development. For VOA, James Shimanyula has more from the Kenyan capital in Nairobi, where the UN Habitat Assembly has wrapped up.
The 2030 Agenda is aimed at ending poverty in all its forms, envisages a world of universal respect for human rights and human dignity, the rule of law, justice, equality, and non-discrimination, a secured world free of poverty and hunger, as well as full and productive employment, access to quality education, universal health coverage, the achievement of gender equality, the empowerment of all women and girls, and an end to environmental degradation. Explaining why today's world is a world in crisis, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres had this to say.
Inequalities are increasing. Global temperatures are rising with catastrophic effects. Debt is straining developing countries' economies to the limit. Halfway to the deadline for the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, we are leaving more than half the world behind. An estimated 670 million still live in extreme poverty, and over 1 billion people still live in slums.
Saba Korosi, president of the United Nations General Assembly, outlined important ways that cities can become more sustainable.
We need comprehensive data and statistics collection. Governments must monitor future populations to assess risk associated with climate change, such as flooding, heat waves, epidemics, food security, and fresh water.
United Nations Human Settlements Program Executive Director Maimuna Sharif decried belittlement of women and discrimination against them.
Women continue to face discrimination through structural and systematic barriers that prevent them from taking leadership roles. This results in unequal access to rights. If we continue on this current trajectory, the political gender gap is expected to take more than 145 years to close, and the economic gender gap will take 265 years to close.
This is how Lee Yunhua, United Nations Under Secretary General for Economics and Social Affairs, briefly focused on the 2030 Universal Agenda.
Despite our promise, some 670 million people live in extreme poverty. One quarter of the young people are without school, training, or employment. The world is far from achieving the goal of sustainable cities. Nearly 1.1 billion people are living in the urban slums, just about half of the world's urban population.
One of the delegates at the assembly, Adama Bojang, director in Gambia's Ministry of Local Government in the capital, Banjul, reflected on a common adage in the world which women propagate when they bring to light the value of womanhood.
These are moments that people can learn that what can men do, women can equally do. And it is also an encouragement for other women to participate into politics. When people talk about politics, it's a different dimension in Africa. And without that, there will be a low implementation of the SDGs. My appeal is for donors and partners to come to the aid of developing countries.
Summarizing what the Assembly has accomplished, Kenyan delegate Rosalind Wanjiku Kariuki minced no words when she said,
"Well, I think it's just a talk because this is something they've been talking. They've been talking of the same thing. No action has been taken. Don't think they will have made anything. I don't think there are new ideas because they were talking of what they talked of in 2019. In my opinion, there were no surprises. Perhaps the surprises were from large number of women who attended the assembly."
Ugandan delegate Alex Serumanga disagrees.
"Call it a success because getting unanimity on many things at the United Nations is not easy. It's important to note that the Sustainable Development Goals came out of a process which saw the Millennium Development Goals that the UN had set decades earlier had not been achieved. What I can say is the fact that a resolution passed unanimously in support of the United Nations achieving the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030 is a good step, but a lot more work needs to be done. I would not say that there were necessarily new ideas being discussed, but I believe one of the important functions of this conference was for people to see what has been done, see what has not been done, and chart a way forward, ensure that what has not been achieved can be achieved in the years to come."
UN Habitat says the 2030 agenda is the most comprehensive blueprint to date for eliminating extreme poverty, reducing inequality, and protecting the planet. This is James Shimanyula reporting for VOA News in Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports Info. That, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. It's a big night for African football as Al Ahly will be aiming to be crowned champions of Africa once again when they take on reigning champions, wedded Athletic Club of Casablanca, in the second leg of their CAF Champions League final. The Moroccan outfit's title pursuit took a huge blow following last week's first leg defeat and now have an uphill climb as they look to retain the continental prize for the first time ever. Wedded struggle were highlighted in the final as they suffered a 2-1 first leg defeat at the hands of Al Ahly and a face-off in a repeat of last year's final at the Cairo International Stadium. Sunday's showdown is now the only thing potentially between Al Ahly and the trophy clean sweep, having also clinched both the Egyptian Cup and the Super Cup back at home. Staying with football news, Manchester City tasted Champions League glory at last on Saturday as the second-half lottery strike gave the favourites a 1-0 victory over Inter Milan in a tense final, allowing Pep Guardiola's side to complete a remarkable treble. Rodri fired in from a Bernardo Silva cutback midway through the second half at the Atatürk Olympic Stadium to decide a game in which City were knocked out of their usual rhythm and lost Kevin De Bruyne to injury. And to South Africa, where the South African national team Bafana Bafana legends Dr. Khumalo and Mark Williams have paid tribute to the late former Bafana Bafana coach Clive Baker, recalling that he had made a major contribution to South African football. Coach Baker died after a battle with Lewy body dementia on Saturday at the age of 78. Baker led South Africa to their only continental triumph at the African Cup of Nations finals in 1996 and also steered the side to a maiden World Cup appearance in France in 1998 and is fondly remembered by fans across the country, as has been evident by the tremendous support he received after taking ill.
He instills a lot of good spirit in me, confidence. It's not easy to carry a country, but with life, he made it look easy.
He used to be on the corner as a father, the captain. He let the families also come.
And now to athletics.
Faith Kipyegon on Friday broke the women's 5,000 meters world record after clocking 14 minutes 05.20 seconds at the Paris Diamond League, barely a week after shattering the 1,500 meters record in Florence. Kipyegon overtook previous record holder Lisbeth Gide of Ethiopia with 600 meters to go, beating the previous record of 14 minutes 06.62 seconds set by the Ethiopian on July 10, 2020 in Valencia, Spain. She is the first Kenyan woman to hold the 5,000 meters world record.
This was amazing, running a world record again. It's just something special, and I really thank God. I thank God.
And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Is the international community softening its concern over the fighting in the Sudan on the basis of recent developments? It would seem that this may be so. Yet, since the Saudi Arabia American government ceased the search for a ceasefire in the Sudan, evidence shows that fighting has increased, particularly in the surroundings of Ukraine and other parts of the country. Question that is being asked is why? Why this redirection of attention? Maybe because the ceasefire agreements which were ordered and then constantly violated. That may be one of the reasons. Secondly, there seems to be no clear idea what is the essence of the crisis. At one time, it was suggested a solution in the Sudan may arise once the MSF militia has been absorbed into the regular government. But this is not really what is the essence. Not much has been discussed about the commercial interests of the two commanders. Again, a lot of evidence shows that these armies and the militia control massive commercial interest, and this may be one of the reasons why they are not willing to give up. It's not just merely to gain territory for what they may lose, and yet nothing has been done about that. We cannot be sure that other parties external to Sudan are not involved in this commercial interest. It is therefore necessary for the two key international organizations associated with the Sudan, the League of Arab States and the African Union, to redouble their efforts. Suggestions have been made already that these two groups are planning to have a joint mediation effort, but nothing further has been said. And most troubling in this situation in the Sudan is a reported interview with the head of the militia. He was quoted as boasting that his militia has captured the largest military complex containing arms and ammunition. He's only saying that he has had a firmer grip of the capital, Khartoum. The United States and Saudi Arabia, last week, to be precise, called for a 24-hour ceasefire to allow transport of humanitarian material. Early information said last yesterday that short and brief ceasefire was holding. So the African Union in particular has a special interest in this situation. But there is a lacuna in the African Union, where it relies mostly to outside sources for its intelligence, credible intelligence. And it is time that the African Union debate or decide on the need for a dedicated think tank for the African continent. Relying on others' intelligence may not be enough, and it could be dangerous. This brings me to a remark that was once made by Malumu Nyerere just before he voluntarily vacated the presidency of Tanzania. He recalled that for years he had been pleading with the Africans to institute something like the OECD in Europe so that in crises like these, where they will be in a better position to determine what course to follow. So this is why I believe this is the most important time for the African Union to consider its own continental think tank. And there are talents in Africa to be able to provide credible intelligence that may be useful to the African continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
People's Way.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
I'm on the mix. Hold on, mercy. How you die, I go die there. Any trouble come, I go dead. For this your love, baby, I go fat it. Cause you're the only one for me, and I'm the only one for you. I know I ever lie to you, cause you're the one who lied to me. You're the only one for me, and I'm the only one for you. I know I ever lie to you, cause you're the one who lied to me. I don't fly on the world. I don't see no fly like you. I don't search. I don't see no way about you. I don't meet a lot of girls, but none of them fine like you. I don't look. I don't see no girl like you. But you're my baby. You're not the only girl I want, yeah. Me baby, yo, yeah. You're not the one way I can love, yeah. And I go always there for you, yeah. You're not the only girl I want, yeah. So many days I pray to God for make you give me love. You give me your love. And I won't thank God back for you give me your love. So I don't know you. Teach you like egg bomb by you. Taught you not back by your bio, you. Tell God take it, girl. I don't see no way about you. I don't meet a lot of girls, but none of them fine like you. I don't look. I don't see no girl like you. Cause you're my
Don't be on the beat. Take me back to bam bam, biti bajida, make it come for me. Why baby make it come for biti bajida, make it come for me. Why baby make it come for me. By my side, baby, I will love you, die. No, no lie, no, no lie. Yeah. I say you there for my mind, yeah, you there for my mind, no, no. I say you there for my mind, yeah, you there for my mind, no, no. Baby, say you know, anything you want, I will do for you. Anything you want, baby, I'll do, I'll stand for you.
Make a sin in a cocoa. We can all caress on a mosama, would you want? You shake it for me, man. A guy, visit that you.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here. English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, when kings lose direction, they become servants. I'm your host, Peter.